You are listening to the first episode of the Collaborative Business Podcast.
Collaborative businesses are on the rise, and this is the Collaborative Business Podcast, a podcast that will help you find answers and provides useful insights to the best ways of working together in partnerships, alliances, and many other kind of business-to-business collaboration. Here's your host, Peter Simoons.
Hi there, welcome to the first episode of the Collaborative Business Podcast. I'm Peter Simoons, and I'm your host. So what is this podcast going to be about? The intro already gave away a fair bit. It's about collaborative businesses, or businesses that work together in a business-to-business environment. It is my intention to highlight in this podcast many types of business collaborations. This can be strategic alliances between large organizations, partnerships or joint ventures between smaller organizations, outsourcing for solo entrepreneurs, and any other type of business-to-business collaboration. I realize I'm choosing quite a broad field to cover, but I expect that over time we will see that there are many similarities to discover in how companies along the spectrum deal with their different kind of partnerships. I plan to have a guest in every episode of the podcast, a guest who specialized in his or her area of the collaborative business spectrum, or a guest who built his business thanks to the collaboration they established. In this first episode, I will be talking to Anoop Nadwani. You will hear Anoop introduce himself as the founder and managing director of Consortio Consulting, a consulting company in the UK that is focused on helping clients build businesses based on collaborative relationship. But we need to congratulate Anoop, as since we recorded the conversation, Anoop took up a new challenge and joined Worldpay in the role of an alliance director. Anoop has built extensive experience in supplier relationship management and in alliance management. And in this episode with Anoop, we will highlight both areas and discover already some of the similarities between these two areas. And we hear some wise lessons from Anoop. In the next episodes, I hope to bring more guests into the podcast from a diverse field like experienced alliance managers, business owners, and entrepreneurs. I have a wish list of people who I'd like to have the conversation with. Among them, a gentleman specialized in outsourcing for entrepreneurs, a lady who travels the world while running her business, and a gentleman from a company that helps their users to easily collect and find everything that matters in life. All of them can only do what they do in their business thanks to one or more collaborations. And if you, as a listener, have a person in mind you would like to hear in one of the next episodes, please let me know in the comments on the website under the show notes. You can find it at simoons.com/episode1. For now, let's move to the conversation with Anoop. Hi Anoop, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Peter.
Good to talk to you again.
Likewise.
Anoop, we speak often to each other, but for the listeners, you might be a new guy. So can you introduce yourself to the listeners and who you are, what you do?
Absolutely, I will. Absolutely. So I'm currently the founder and managing director of a consulting company called Consortio Consulting Limited. It's a consulting organization that helps companies build business based on collaborative relationships. But to provide a bit of flavor about my background, I think would be good. So I'm an entrepreneurial and business-centric senior alliances and partnerships and SRM professional, so a supplier relationship management professional. I've got around 15 years of professional experience in this area, particularly around the area of alliances and partnerships. Most of that experience has been in the mobile and converged communication sector, having worked for the likes of Vodafone, Hutchison, and most recently at Nokia for the last 7 years or so, to name a few. But more recently, over the last 3-4 months, since about May of 2013, I was involved in the banking sector, running the SRM program for them for a little while. My experience is very much around developing groundbreaking strategic business development initiatives through the establishment and development of global strategic alliances. And those include, you know, mobile operators, independent software vendors, ecosystem players, and also, as I said, because of supplier relationship management, looking at the strategic supplier relationships, etc. And the intent is to look at creating, capturing, and maximizing mutual value for all.
Okay. Thank you. That's very interesting. So I hear two very distinct elements in the sense that you are working in strategic alliances And you are working on the supply relationship management side.
That's correct. And the reason is that there's such a strong parallel between what you need to do in supplier relationship management and what you need to do in the strategic alliances and partnerships area as well.
So supplier relationship management in this case is not a good old-fashioned traditional procurement.
Absolutely not. It is so, so different. And when I've spoken at various conferences and I liken and I talk about the SRM definition, I liken that to the definition of alliances and partnerships. And I actually do a comparison between SRM and alliances. And I bring that thinking together to people who are skeptics about alliances with suppliers. I actually bring it together. I bring it to bear to actually show them that actually it is one and the same to an extent.
So you're already challenging me to ask the next question, aren't you? So thinking that we have some skeptics among the listeners.
Yeah.
Can you do that the same here in the podcast? So what is the comparison?
I certainly can. Well, let me start off by giving you my definition of supply relationship management. There are many definitions around. Most are pretty correct, but I'm going to give you my definition that I have it. And I'll give you a definition of alliances and partnerships, and I'll bring the similarities piece as well. So from a supply relationship management, SRM perspective, I see supply relationship management as it's a discipline of systematic management of supplier relationships / collaboration to optimize value through cost reduction, innovation, risk mitigation, and growth throughout the relationship lifecycle. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It entails broadening the view of key suppliers so that you see them as not simply vendors that you buy things from, but as actual or potential partners who can help you drive competitive advantage, and where you look at sharing risk and reward and innovation. So bottom line, I look at this as an investment strategy. Now, there's some key words in this. I talk about potential partners. I talk about driving competitive advantage. I talk about sharing risk and reward and innovation. That is so different to the traditional procurement transactional where you buy things from a supplier and that's all you do. Yeah. Let me then run through a definition of what I have around alliances and partnerships. So I look at it as a relationship between two or more organizations that retain their independence, okay, in which common objectives are jointly pursued, in which risks and rewards are shared, but not necessarily equally. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, alliances and partnerships are about co-creating, capturing, and maximizing mutual value. It's about leveraging each other's assets to create the win-win-win, with the eventual customer being consumer or business at the center. Alliances can enable innovation, and alliances and partnerships are about a marathon, not a sprint. So it's long-term versus short-term. It's seen as an investment strategy, right?
Yeah.
So comparing the two, if I look at the similarities, the word collaboration comes into play because collaboration is absolutely the fundamental foundation of everything you do within SRM and alliances. The other similarity is the co-creation, capture, and maximization of mutual value. The other thing I talk about is leveraging common objectives. I talk about shared risk, shared reward. I talk about an investment strategy, and there's a few more. So immediately what I do here is to the skeptics, I actually say there are some incredibly strong similarities between what you need to do in supplier relationship management and what you do within alliances.
Yes, I see those similarities, and it's a very clear element that you describe. But thinking back, and I think we've all been there, somehow have to think back of those procurement people who are tough negotiators.
Right.
I recognize from the past two kinds of negotiators. One who knows when to stop and who knows when we both have a fair deal as supplier and the customer. And the other one who continues to squeeze out the supplier. Now, the first one might be suitable to work on collaborative supplier relationships, but the second one will have a hard time. So what would a procurement department need to do to transform those relationships?
Okay. So there's, you know, the first thing they need to do is they need to understand that they need to start viewing and treating the suppliers from a different set of lenses. They need to look at them as more than just suppliers. And you're quite right. You know, there's some traditional view of suppliers. So the traditional procurement people look at the suppliers and they just say, these are our companies where we just purchase goods and services. Our interactions are fundamentally zero sum. Mm-hmm. We have leverage over the suppliers, and that leverage is key to value, because what we get is through the leverage, we get the best price, best terms, et cetera, because we're the customer, they're the supplier, they'll do what we want. And it's all about the contracts. The contract is kind of the centerpiece, and it's the primary tool by which we, the procurement people, manage interactions with the suppliers. That's a very traditional view of a procurement person. Whereas the alternative view should be that we've selected these suppliers. And by the way, you know, you cannot take this view with your with a company's entire supplier base. You have to look at the suppliers that are most strategic to you. And that's segmenting these suppliers is a completely different topic. And we can touch on that if necessary. But in essence, when you've segmented your suppliers and you've cherry-picked those suppliers that are most strategic to you, you have to apply a different lens to looking at these suppliers. And the alternative view is that these suppliers are a source of knowledge, expertise to your company. They have assets that we as a company don't necessarily have. And that's why we've selected these suppliers, because they have the assets that we can leverage to gain competitive advantage. And I think this is critical, that you need to look at this to see how can we gain competitive advantage by tapping into the knowledge, the expertise, the resources that suppliers bring to us. Yeah. What we need to recognize is, you know, we're in a very competitive world out there with competing supply chains, et cetera. Our success as a company needs to be tied to that of our suppliers. And they need to help us win. We need to help them win as well. And the interesting thing is, the traditional procurement people look at contracts as a primary source of value, or the primary way of interacting with these suppliers, and they see that as where they have value. Whereas in this alternative view, this looking at the new lens, collaboration with suppliers is absolutely key to value. It is just, without a shadow of a doubt, the most important thing that these procurement people need to do. Mm-hmm. And the other thing with these suppliers is that this alternative view, the complex supplier relationships require things like formalized governance and relationship management. And again, this takes it back to this alliances approach, where you need that formalized governance, you need a very strong relationship management aspect in managing the suppliers. So that's what I would say in terms of looking at traditional procurement people to the new paradigm of procurement people. They need to change. Now, the one thing I will say, Peter, and I don't mind saying this, is the challenge I have with procurement people in general, even those who are looking to change this new form, is as procurement people, they still have in their mindset that my job is to beat the supplier as hard as possible and keep them at arm's distance and whatever. And even some of the new breed of procurement people still do not have the skills, the aptitude, the attitude, and the mentality to start dealing with suppliers as partners. They're quite skeptic. Sometimes it's because of what they have internally, their mindset, where they've been strong negotiators, and that's the way they've always been, and they'll find it difficult to move on to this new paradigm. The other thing is, as well, is that, you know, not having the attitudes and mindsets. But the other thing is how they're incentivized as well. If at the end of the day, all procurement people are incentivized is around cost reduction, guess what? They're never going to step out to look at creating value, because they're not going to be incentivized to be able to do that.
Again, I see a parallel with alliances.
Yes.
When you measure alliance people like you measure your salespeople, you will have different results than when you measure them differently.
Exactly.
You will probably not put a hardcore quarterly driven salesperson into an alliance role.
You wouldn't, because you'd actually you destroy the alliance.
Absolutely.
Yes.
So there's the same parallel. Then it also requires a different way of hiring your procurement people.
I agree with you. And I've seen, there is one company, Peter, that I've seen that actually has recognized this so well, that their supplier management team are ex-salespeople. So they've actually come in from the other side.
Yeah.
Or they're actually alliances people who understand this space. And I've been there. I've talked to this particular company in many respects about a whole raft of things. And that is absolutely the case. They've seen the light and they recognize that the type of people they need to bring in are very, very different people to manage these relationships.
What is then the result for the company? What does this different way of working with your suppliers bring to the company?
The different ways that they start to look at the suppliers as bringing in new value, new innovation. They actually look at there's assets that this supplier has. So, a technology company working, say, with an oil company, you'd kind of think, well, what innovation can they bring? Well, there's a very public example of. A company like IBM, or in fact, a company like HP that brought in sensor technology from their printers mm-hmm. into a company like Shell, and they've used the sensors from the printers to actually look at deep well sensors. So they've actually adapted that technology through innovation to actually use the sensors that HP printers have to deep well technology. I mean, that's the sort of stuff you wouldn't get from standard procurement people.
No.
Right?
I agree.
So there's kind of one example, for instance. So it's creating this new value, it's creating this new innovation, being able to do things differently, such that the supplier's assets and the assets of the company that's buying the services or working collaboratively are actually creating more value. So 1 + 1 = 3. Yeah?
Yeah. Now you already mentioned segmenting.
Yeah.
When I listen to our conversation, I feel somehow that this is not something that smaller companies will do, but especially larger companies will do. But on the other hand, smaller companies might already work more in a collaborative supplier relationship by nature. What's your view on that?
I think that is correct. Smaller companies are do look at suppliers much more collaboratively. They do work that way, but their businesses are much smaller, whereas the larger companies typically will work with their suppliers, and they'll segment around spend, etc. They won't segment necessarily around strategic fit to their business, and that's what they really need to be doing. Smaller companies are much more adapt, and they need to adapt because they're under fire, they're under competition with some of their larger counterparts. So I think they need to adapt, and they look at suppliers and just say, how can we collaborate, because we know that we need to start accelerating away from the pack.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And now when we look at it from the supplier perspective,
right?
What does a supplier need to do differently to work with a customer?
This is a good question, and I bring an example of my days at Nokia, because I managed a particular supplier in the IT space, and one of the things that I did is I said, in order for the supplier to work, to demonstrate the value that they can bring for the company, I don't want an account director to come in and just be concerned about where they're going to meet their next quarterly targets in terms of revenues. Because at the end of the day, their management is saying to them, I want to make sure that you meet your quarterly revenue targets and you drive more business and all that kind of stuff, which is understandable and it's fair. However, I actually take the approach that as a supplier, I'd want a strategic business development director to come in and talk to me about what they have in terms of their center of excellence, what are they doing with other companies that they've seen best practices around, and start to bring that innovative thinking into the organization. So I, one of the things I did with one of my suppliers is I actually got the people who were running the center of excellence for this supplier to come in and talk to me about some really good things that they were doing with other customers that they could demonstrate to us and talk to us about, and start to shake Nokia up in terms of where this supplier could bring new value into Nokia, which Nokia had not seen in the past. So I opened up the kimono around the potential, but by actually getting a strategic biz dev person from the supplier to come in and talk to us about the real opportunity in working with the supplier. Now, this strategic business development director was not incented in terms of revenue targets for us. Their incentivization towards us was around bringing in their entire perspective, their entire organization into Nokia, bringing value to us.
Okay, and you on your hand were also incented differently than the traditional procurement people.
I was. My incentivization was around looking at where we could really, really collaborate with a supplier, drive the relationship with the supplier. The interesting thing was that in Nokia, my role was to manage the relationship with that supplier in the specific category. I actually broadened that. I actually looked at where else the supplier could actually add value into Nokia's business. So I broke it outside of just the IT category. I looked at sales, I looked at customer care, I looked at all sorts of other areas. And to be honest, the supplier actually helped us in a lot more areas than just the IT category.
Mm-hmm. I can imagine. Yeah, because those boundaries are expanding and blurring in a sense that both Nokia as your company has IT everywhere.
Yes.
But on the other hand, also IT companies are growing more and more. Well, you mentioned the sensor example.
Yes.
The good old days of IT, nobody would have thought about sensors.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of talk about the consumerization of IT, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, you mentioned in your introduction that you've been a long time already in alliances and strategic supplier relationships.
Yes.
Is there one example, when you look back, that you would say, well, that taught me the most about what to do and what not to do?
Yes, there is. I've got a number of examples, Peter, but the one that I kind of rave on about the most, the one I put up on my mantelpiece is, and it goes back a little while. So it was when I was at Hutchison, the mobile operator in the UK, they were the first to launch 3G services around the world. But when I joined the company, one of the relationships I knew I needed to work with and form and drive was a relationship with Microsoft. And I was quite new in to the alliances space then. I understood collaborative relationship management. I was quite new in. So I had a lot to learn. And when I came into the organization, the very first thing that I got to realize is that the relationship between the two CEOs of both companies was extremely rocky. It got off on the wrong foot because the conversations were very transactional, particularly from a Microsoft looking to sell to Hutchison and the reluctance for Hutchison to buy Microsoft technology at that point in time. And this was back in 2001, by the way. Whereas I came at it from a different lens, a different perspective, and I said, actually, what we need to be looking at is how do we leverage each other's assets to create something really, really new. Hutchison was looking to launch a brand new third generation network in the world. It was going to lead. There was a massive opportunity to create something that was going to differentiate Hutchison from the Vodafones, from the Oranges, etc., and lead from the front. And with Microsoft having the assets around communications and email and all that kind of stuff and the desktop presence they had, there was a huge opportunity in the B2B space, the enterprise space, to actually look at creating something that enterprise customers wanted, but also something in the future that consumers would have wanted as well. And the thing that I learned from this is the first thing I had to do is I had to sell the opportunity, the Microsoft opportunity internally, because there was a huge amount of resistance inside of Hutchison to want to work with Microsoft, to the extent that the team inside of Hutchison would say, I'm not sure I want to work with Microsoft because our CEO doesn't want to work with them. So why should I step outside the box to be able to do that? And what I had to do then is convince them from a value proposition perspective to say, I think there's a great opportunity. I think we need to, the conversations that originally happened with the two CEOs were in the wrong direction. We need to reset that. So that's the first thing I need to do is collaborate internally, get people bought in internally. And then the second challenge, once I'd got the internal piece bought in, was to actually then collaborate with Microsoft, who immediately put a wall up to say, our CEOs don't want to work with each other. Why should I want to work with you? Please tell me. And again, yeah. I had to convince them to say that the dialogue that took place was wrong. We need to look at this dialogue around creating some new value, create some real innovation, as opposed to buying from each other. That's not what this dialogue is about. And I got resistance, but I moved up the ladder. I got some very senior people from Microsoft involved. They saw it. They saw the excitement. They saw the opportunity. And it culminated in about 13, 14 months later from when I joined the organization to actually having one down from Steve Ballmer coming into the UK and me actually presenting to that guy with my Hutchison board members with me in that room, with some of the Microsoft senior executive members in that team as well. And what I presented were 8 initiatives that we actually saw that we could work on together. We were already starting to drive forward, which is going to create this new paradigm around where we could collaborate together. And I got an endorsement from Microsoft to say, I love this. You have my exec sponsorship to drive this forward. And in fact, the Microsoft exec said, you are now one of our top 5 bets. And that's the way Microsoft works. They look at top 5 bets, right?
Yeah.
And I actually got my CEO, who initially didn't want to work with Microsoft, he was dragged in, kicking and screaming into this meeting. And he came out of that with the board of Hutchison. He said, Anoop, that is one of the best things I've ever seen anyone do. And I can now see why you were so passionate about driving this forward. I can see the opportunity. Let's go forth and multiply. So to me, that was a resounding success for me that we actually got that buy-in. But it meant collaboration. That it had to be done that way.
And an excellent example, because even though it's more than 12 years old, you said 2001.
Yes.
I hear at least three things that are still, I hear from customers every day.
Yep.
The alliance managers need to sell internally.
Yes.
They can't do it without executive support.
Yep.
And it's long-term. You mentioned 13, 14 months later.
Yes.
And that's what many people, those are three elements that many people tend to forget. So they feel that it's natural that their own organization is with them, and so that the executive is also with them, and that they only need to work with the counterpart.
Yes.
But it starts internally, and it takes a lot of time for to create good successes.
Agreed. Yeah. And that's why, Peter, on one of the blogs that I wrote on your site, you know, the area of internal collaboration is absolutely critical, because otherwise you're pushing water up a very, very steep hill if you don't get that buy-in internally, because you can do whatever you want to externally, but if internally you got no buy-in for it, you know, you're not going to achieve anything.
Yeah, I fully agree. But then I already knew that we were on the same side.
Exactly. And the executive sponsorship is critical. You know, you think about not just alliances, you think about even supplier relationship management. And again, the company I spoke about earlier that's doing a phenomenal job on this, the reason why it's doing a phenomenal job is because they've got a few people who sit on the board of that company who mandate that this is the way you're going to work with suppliers and this is the way you're going to work with partners. It's collaboratively. Right?
Yeah.
And that executive sponsorship is key critical for both.
Yeah. So what will be your number one recommendation for organizations that will enter into a partnership?
Good God.
you already mentioned a couple, didn't you?
I already mentioned a couple. One is gain executive level sponsorship, because that executive level sponsorship will unlock so many doors.
Yeah.
Yeah. The second thing I would say is don't build a partnership for the sake of building a partnership. Build it based on a strategy. Make sure you have a strategy that clearly dictates that partnering is a way forward and it's a necessary way forward to enable the strategy.
Oh, yeah? Yes.
The third thing is make sure you have the right people are managing those partnerships, because if you have salespeople, they'll destroy it. The same applies with managing supply relationship. If you give that to procurement to manage, you're going to destroy it. It's just going to be destroyed. Yeah. And the other thing I would say just very quickly is make sure that when you're measuring the value, that you're measuring short-term tangible stuff as well as long-term intangibles. Too many people forget about the long-term intangibles. They don't think about this thing that I've heard people talk about, this thing called relationship currencies. And you know, if you don't measure the longer term intangible stuff, as one would say, you're throwing the baby out of the bathwater.
Yeah. So that leads into a new question: how would you measure them? Because it's the soft stuff you are going to measure.
Yes.
A lot of people will find it difficult.
Agreed. You need a combination. So depending on the type of partnership it is, because you get different types of partnerships. You can get partnerships that are mainly around R&D. You can get partnerships around channel. You can get partnerships around deep customer supplier relationships. It depends on the type of partnership you have as to how you'd measure it. I think trying to put in a couple of things there, et cetera, would be very difficult. One of the things I would look at, and one of the things I did at Nokia in particular, is I turned around how you measure, say, supplier relationships, for instance. And I introduced this thing called the mutual joint scorecard, mm-hmm. and a balanced scorecard. And you have a scorecard that has kind of four key elements, right? One is you measure the operational elements of the relationship, so how you're actually doing things, and you measure the relationship aspect. So how often are you meeting? What things are you doing outside of your work environment? How trustworthy is your relationship becoming? And you can start to measure these kind of things. It is soft, but you can start to measure these kind of things. And these are what I call lead indicators. Yeah.
Yeah,
and then that leads into the outcome indicators, which are around financial performance and around investment performance and et cetera as well. So you can actually start to look at those as kind of your outcome measures. So the financial stuff you can measure in terms of revenues, in terms of cost optimization, et cetera. But you can also measure things like how many types of innovations has the company brought into you? How many of those have you taken on board? And what does that lead to for the future? You can also measure, have you actually mitigated risk, competitive risk from your competitors by working with these partners and these suppliers by creating something that actually keeps competitors at bay? Yeah. How much access do you have to thought leaders? So you have the CTOs of companies wanting to come and speak to you about, we can bring in some new value into you, et cetera. That you can't really measure that. Very difficult to measure. It's a soft measure. But the other way you can do that, Peter, is case studies. If you pull together case studies with things you've done with partners or with suppliers around a new piece of innovation, around something you've done around the relationship, et cetera, that speaks volumes. It's kind of measurable, yet it's not measurable, if you know what I mean.
It's not really measurable, but it's more, how do you call it, a marketing kind of measurement.
It is.
So, yes. Okay. So when you mentioned the scorecard, you mentioned that you were setting up a mutual scorecard.
Yes. It was a joint mutual scorecard between myself and between Nokia and the supplier. And I actually got the supplier to buy into it. I got Nokia to buy into it. And we set up a mutual scorecard. And we actually presented that at executive level meetings.
So both executives on both sides were presented with the same figures?
Absolutely correct.
That's a very strong way of measuring those relationships.
Yes.
Yeah. Great. Well, I think we can easily go on for a whole day, Anoop.
Absolutely.
we'll do that another time when we see each other again.
Yes.
Is there in this podcast anything you would like to share with the listeners that we haven't discussed yet?
I would actually say a couple of things. One is that for those people who are skeptics, I've learned something that today, collaboration is a new competition. Absolutely is a new competition. Those companies that do not collaborate with their suppliers, with their partners, et cetera, the way they need to collaborate are going to be left behind. There's every bit of evidence from all sorts of surveys, everything that I've seen, IBM Global CEO study, they all say collaboration is the number one trait. It's absolutely the way forward. So I would say to those companies, if you're not doing it already, start doing it, and seek help. There's people around such as yourself, Peter, such as myself. We can help you on that journey, but you absolutely need to do it. Otherwise, you're going to get left behind.
Yeah, I can't agree more. Okay, well.
All right.
Thank you for this great interview, Anoop.
Thank you. Thanks, Peter.
Okay, everybody. So far for this week. The information mentioned in this episode can be read in the show notes at simons.com/episode1. Thanks for tuning in, and I will be back soon with a new guest. Until then, bye for now.
Thanks for listening to the Collaborative Business Podcast. For more insights about business collaboration, partnerships, and alliances, hop over to www.cmoons.com.